Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 509, Science Faction, the upside of Down syndrome.
The upside of Down syndrome, like, it's not just like increased hugs. It's not just the fact that you can use performance-enhancing hugs in school, in church, wherever, yep. And people don't bat an eye.
Yes, that is true. I do the same thing, both in schools and churches nowadays, and I am looked at like some kind of crazy man. I'm just, you know, I'm hugging children as I walk through an elementary school, and I'm seen as the bad guy.
Well, I can see why. Yeah, you don't have Down syndrome. Like, yeah, you are.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm also fairly large and I would say aggressive with my hugs.
After you hug, you start running away. So, like, you'll grab a child.
Yes.
In an embrace. You'll embrace a child.
You know what they say is the best hug lasts for 50 yards.
Oh, it's weird that you measure your hugs in distance and not time spent embraced.
Well, it just depends if I'm in good shape or not and how quickly I can clear that 50 yards.
Also, 50 yards, that's a sprint with a kid.
Yeah, I usually like to hung them over my shoulder. But anyway, speaking of sprinting with kids, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. Let me put this in perspective. If you could consistently run 50 yards with a kid, you'd be in the NFL Hall of Fame. If you
could, everybody could run 50 yards with a kid. It just, you're not going very fast.
With PTA members trying to tackle them left and right? No, you consistently run.
Please, let one of those Poindexters try. I will Heisman Trophy stiff arm those motherfuckers to the ground.
How obese is the child you're grabbing? Like, there's a difference.
That's
in
true.
Challenge
that
rating
true.
Amongst children.
That is true. That's actually how we got such good NFL players in this country, is we used to have the most obese children. But as we covered a few years ago, Mexico has actually beat us out as having the most obese children, which is why their football scene is up and coming and will undoubtedly swamp our own.
No, there's a lot of training camps where they'll send high school and college players to go steal Mexican children.
Yeah.
Nick Saban has a truck. Like, they have it locked down. They go down to Rosarito, Mexico, and they don't come back until they either have an orphanage or a championship.
I feel like this is the modern version of like that Spartan thing where the Spartan warriors at a certain age had to go and like sneak into the city and kill a slave in the middle of the night.
So what happens to these babies you steal? I don't know. It'd be nice if one of them became a towel boy or something.
Yeah, they're all placeholders. All right, that's fantastic. Let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number one, the upside of Down syndrome. Now, Damian, you already mentioned one is excellent hugs. You know, I've thought before, like, someone with Down syndrome tends to not be nearly as much of a jerk as they grow up, right? Like if you're a parent, while it must be hard, obviously, and you have to obviously think about lifelong investment in that child, like, you don't have as many snotty 15-year-olds like, screw you, mom, you don't know shit. Chet is a great boyfriend, and he's really nice to me, even though he sells me on Craigslist.
I'm Chet. Stay the fuck away from my 16-year-old fiance. I don't care if she is your daughter, bitch.
Yeah, I feel like you don't get that aspect of it.
Yeah, there certainly is. Like, yeah, there are issues that come with being Down syndrome. Like, there's a lot of cardiac issues, a lot of health issues, cognitive issues. But, like, the evil gene, which seems to exist in all people, does not exist if you have Down syndrome.
Except for, as you pointed out in the Down syndrome supervillain, a somewhat politically incorrect character that you created a long time ago.
Yes, that is right. And when the biggest, most Down syndrome-y crimes need to be committed, you will find... By the way, I have a name. It's Augustus. It's not like anything...
You never actually told us.
This show appreciates caricatures. What are you going to say? Oh, Augustus strikes again? That doesn't have the same ring to it, and nor am I being quite the advocate of my people.
So let's review real quickly. Down syndrome is our name for a disease that is characterized as trisomy 21, which means you essentially have three copies of that 21st chromosome. You might think like, well, wait, why is that a problem? If you have an extra copy, we all have two. If you have three, like, shouldn't you have like a giant dick or something? And it's not how it works. It turns out in genetics, if you end up getting three copies of something, it can actually cause a lot of problems. And by the way, trisomy 21 is the most common one we know of, but there are other diseases where you end up getting an extra copy of a specific chromosome and it causes problems, including sometimes like sex chromosomes. So like you'll get XXY and diseases like that. And despite what comic books have told you,
two vaginas,
it rarely conveys superpowers. It almost always is bad.
So two vaginas is bad, or two vaginas is not a superpower? Because I would like to fight you on both.
Yeah, that's not how that works. But obviously we have all been somewhat familiar, and at least passingly familiar, with people with Down syndrome. We see fairly substantial cognitive impairment, some fairly typical phenotypic differences, including skull morphology and stuff like that. And commonly we have very short lifespans, though I will say that is changing, especially in the last few decades. We have been able to take the lifespan up decades on average for those people with trisomy 21 that get treatment, because we're slowly figuring out what it is that is killing them, the damage to the organs, et cetera, and being able to kind of compensate or deal with that and then extend these people's lives, which is fantastic. But it obviously has a lot of negative effects that we're all aware of. Well, one of the effects you might not be aware of is actually a positive one. And this is one that's been noted for almost a century, which is that people with Down syndrome tend not to have major vascular issues that are associated with age. Now, this wasn't as obvious earlier on, because again, people with Down syndrome tended to die earlier, but as they're living longer and longer, it's becoming even more pronounced that they don't get the same, in general, don't get the same type of vascular issues like solid cancers, atherosclerosis, hypertension. These type of issues tend to not be a big deal for aging people with Down syndrome. Now, they do have other issues that get worse with age. Their cognitive impairment tends to get worse with age, as does they tend to get early Alzheimer's disease, reduced vision and muscle weakness. Those are all nervous system issues, and we are aware of that. We're aware that there's something going on where they tend to have increased nervous system issues, but they have decreased vascular issues.
I've always wondered, because I don't know if you follow the Down syndrome bodybuilding circuit, but those dudes are cut. Those dudes are jacked. They are cut, but they're not that vascular type of cut, you know?
They don't have all those, the veins and like the weird snake looking abs.
No, don't get me wrong. Chiseled.
Yep.
Just man meat. Just erection fuel. But if you're into that vascular cut, I'd recommend other bodybuilding competitive leagues for your calendars.
Yes. Like the amputee one that we also follow.
Damn, those guys are cut, but like in a tragic way.
Yeah, like some of them literally got cut. So we have been curious about this for a while. Well, this paper that just came out seems to point to the possible mechanism of action. Now, you can read about this in Science Daily, though it's obviously in a real journal, but what they found is a gene that's associated with Down syndrome called DSCR1, which is on the 21st chromosome, obviously, protects against abnormal vascularization of the cornea associated with corneal opacity. Basically, it is stopping people with Down syndrome from getting things like retinal corneas later in life. That's really interesting, because obviously, if we can figure out what the mechanism of action is, and we found this gene mechanism action, and we can replicate it with some pharmaceuticals or treatment or something, we could then take this knowledge and help non-Down syndrome people as they age avoid these vascular issues that are, by the way, a huge problem in elderly populations.
Do the people who get this treatment all of a sudden, suddenly, maybe not all of them, but maybe just a couple percentage of them, find themselves start wanting to suddenly hug people awkwardly when walking, I don't know, through a mall?
We can only help. We can only hope, Damien.
They want to start slaying it at a McDonald's? Because that is a fact you told me, and something that is heartwarming. If you work for McDonald's, and I think they were one of the pioneering fast food franchises to do it, but at a McDonald's, they love hiring people with Down syndrome, because while they do take a little bit longer to train than your average teenager or whoever your employee is, they turn out to be such incredible employees. They make your company look good. They're just a great service.
And they thrive on routine, so it's really helpful for them. Obviously, companies like McDonald's that do hire them help them then get off into, like, a kind of get a step up on
McDonald's.
Their own. get on their own. They also are like notorious for not stealing and stuff. So like,
except for your heart.
But like your average McDonald's cashier, I forgot what their number is, but they have like an accepted number where they're like, just based on the fact that we're hiring people oftentimes young and people who don't have money and stuff, there is like a higher than average percentage of the McDonald's employee population that steals money. And the percentage of the McDonald's population with Down syndrome that steals money is like zero.
Oh, don't worry, Gene. I'll lock up the safe when we're done. Ah, you will remember the name Augustus on your payroll.
So I think this is neat for three reasons. Number one, like we said, vascular issues in older people are a big deal, whether that is something like, you know, cornea stuff, whether this is issues with cancers, hypertension, all of this becomes a very big deal as we get older and older. And if you were to cure that tomorrow, if we could find this replication of what's going on in people with Down syndrome via this DSCR1 gene, if we could replicate that with some pharmaceuticals and help older people, we would save not only millions of dollars on healthcare, but millions of lives from ending prematurely from things like hypertension, which is a killer. And so finding out what the mechanism of action is genetically is a huge step, but the next step is to figure out how we could replicate that in normal, healthy people. And that might really, really benefit our society. The second reason is, forget old people, one of the other diseases that they tend not to get is a disease called Kawasaki disease.
Bitchin'.
If you remember to our coronavirus update, that is actually very similar to a disease we are seeing represented in children who are having very bad reactions to coronaviruses, where essentially their internal organs are all being attacked. Looking into research as to what's going on in people with Down syndrome and their seeming immunity to things like Kawasaki disease might actually help us with this pandemic we're dealing with right now. And lastly, and I think something that's also kind of important in like a, you might call it like a touchy-feely sense or something, but like, this is really important. When we look at the vast array of and variety of human beings, that variety can help us solve problems. And even those things we think are negative, things like Down syndrome, can turn out to be something that saves millions and millions of people's lives, because the genetic diversity shows us the benefits of even negative mutations. And so think of how much that could make somebody who has Down syndrome feel good about themselves when they realize that scientific research about what's going on in their body could be saving millions of people's lives. And so for all of those reasons, I love this story. I thought this was a fucking great story. I think things like this should be promoted more. I'm actually really surprised, because it does have a touchy-feely aspect, that it didn't get picked up by like CNN.com and stuff, because it's a great story. It's science. It's people who are, you know, otherwise considered having a negative thing turn out to be positive. And it's related to coronavirus and what it might do, not to mention it could save millions of lives down the line. I'm actually kind of surprised it didn't become like a big NBC story or something.
Well, because what you're saying is, it could, you know, like, you're like the NASA scientists at the end of E.T., like, hey, E.T., we're about to chop you up and grind your organs up, but you're going to cure cancer, big guy. And I think there's a heartwarming story.
None of this has to happen.
No, Bobby, I don't know if you read the fine print of those abstracts. But you brought up that the heartwarming message for this, and that is that there is human diversity and, you know, there's ways we can all benefit humanity.
Yes.
But sure. At least certainly in America, because Down syndrome is one of the things you can test for. What are our Down syndrome rates looking like now versus like when we were kids?
That's an interesting point. I don't actually know, but I bet you it is much lower. I mean, obviously, we have a bigger population, so proportionately, probably much lower. Because you're right, people do amniocentesis and things like that. They can tell ahead of time, and that is something that people will tend to get selective abortions and stuff because of. Also, you know, we're not sure what necessarily are the mechanism of actions that causes that trisomy 21, but it might well be environmental concerns that we might be more conscious of. So we might also just in general not have that happen as much, like in utero.
Like when conceiving at a Larry the Cable Guy concert. Yeah. Has like a plus 23% chance.
Yeah, well, I was trying to think of like what was around in like the 80s that is no longer around. Nearly, it's like if you
Gallagher.
If you're conceived in an Oldsmobile, then that tends to cause it.
Yeah, my grandmother lent me her car. Like what? I was conceived in an Oldsmobile. Clearly, whoever owns this car has gone through menopause or is married to somebody who has gone through menopause. So.
Yeah, like yeah, I just feel like if you were conceived in a 1982 IROC Camaro, there is a higher chance that you might have Down syndrome.
Or just come out with a mullet.
I don't understand it. He was raised in southern Mesa, Arizona, and he came out with a Jersey accent.
That's a cognitive slur.
It just got imprinted. All right. On to article number two, prehistoric women hunters.
Hunting for that D, baby. Goddamn right. You want a good man? Don't wait for a man to come to you, sisters, and you know what I'm talking about. You go find that man and hit him on the head with a club and drag his ass home.
There's so many wrong things about that. But anyway, so in general, we have these ideas of what hunter-gatherer societies look like. And what they tend to look like is men do the hunting and women do the gathering. Now, we might think this is some patriarchal idea that Victorian England imposed on people, but in fact, it's actually fairly consistent through hunter-gatherers that we now currently know. Now, here's the problem. I'm going to go ahead and interrupt myself there. The hunter-gatherers that are around today in places like the Amazon Basin, New Guinea, very remote parts of Africa, etc.
The streets of New York.
They're not representative of hunter-gatherer society widely. These are the places that resisted contact the most. These are the places that were harder to get to, that were more harsh to outsiders, et cetera, et cetera. And very few of them are truly uncontacted. They all have some kind of contact with the outside world, so they're influenced by
it. They're getting DMs every like Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. So they definitely have Facebook.
Somebody from the local village like, hey, Grungluck, you up? Check this out.
They did have Facebook until after this election, and they all moved to Parler. So yeah. Then, yeah, I mean, hunter-gatherers are notoriously conservative. Yeah. So.
We wanted to make the Amazon Basin great again by not burning it down all the fucking time, Bolsonaro.
So we can't always extrapolate from modern-day hunter-gatherer groups as to what was going on. But it's not just modern hunter-gatherer groups that give us this interpretation, because we have literally 1,000, actually more than that if you count Romans, so let's say 2,000-plus years of written records of contact with hunter-gatherer groups. And it seems to stay pretty consistent throughout the world. Whether you're talking about North America, whether you're talking about Gaul or places like that, we tend to see that men tend to hunt, women tend to do gathering and stuff. And there's some adaptive reasoning for that. There's a few things. I mean, there's literally, you can't get over the fact that men have, in general, better upper body strength. That is usually useful, especially for things like projectile hunting with atlatls or later bow and arrow.
I think there is also go back in time, like Bobby, I picture you go back in your UC Berkeley time machine that you can only use. You got to reserve the time machine years ahead.
Yep.
But finally, your time comes up. You go back in time and you want to check out an early hunter gatherer village. And it turns out that this is one where the men stayed home and the women hunted. But never again after this, after the women came back and they found that like the kids had thrown this huge party with the adults. There was no discipline. The dads were letting them drink.
One of the kids had a broken arm, but nobody was really paying attention to him.
I wasn't going to take him to hospital. He walk off. He can walk off. Don't coddle, boy. He almost four.
So we have seen over and over again that in general, men tend to hunt, women tend to... There's also, by the way, and this isn't nearly as controversial as it sounds. It sounds like super sexist and controversial, but it's actually just a fact of neurobiology that there is hand-eye coordination differences between men and women. And so that does affect things like projectile hunting. And it also, obviously, things like hunting with spears. Like, if you're going to go run up to a big animal and just jam a spear into it, a little bit of extra strength and some upper body muscle does help out, as well as increased bone density and things like that.
Yeah. Between the difference between me and my fiance, as far as like if you just were to underhand softball toss a rag to one of us, yeah. It's like the difference between like a cat and a snail.
Yes, yes, that's exactly what I was talking about. However, a very interesting article came out this week that started with the examination of a 9,000-year-old skeleton from the Andean Highlands. So this is down in Peru. This is high altitude. And they found a skeleton that was interred with its life's tools, which was a hunting toolkit that include projectile points and animal processing tools. And the osteologist who was there was like, the osteologist who was there was like, I think this is actually a woman's skeleton. And they did further protein analysis and they found out it was indeed. And then they went back to look at other skeletons from the same time period. They looked at 429 individuals from 107 sites. Of them, 27 of those individuals were associated with big game hunting tools. 11 were female and 15 were male. That's a pretty close ratio, looking at the possibility that 30 to 50% of these prehistoric hunters were female. So what's going on? How did we get this so wrong? How were everybody from the Roman documentarians to the early Europeans who came to the Americas to people who go to the New Guinea Highlands? How were all of these people possibly wrong? How is it that we had 30 to 50% of hunters as women? What could possibly explain that?
People just don't want to acknowledge that some lady's got that big game hunting energy, yo.
Well, there's a few things here. Number one, we were looking at a tiny sample size. Again, 27 individuals in this eventual end size, this end sample size. But number two is, you have to remember that this is a very unique time period in human history. And the fact is, those people, those early Europeans who came and documented the Native Americans as being male hunters and female gatherers, were not wrong, because they were looking at a very different time in human history. 9,000 years ago in the Americas, we are looking at a series of big game hunters, meaning that these people that are running through these two continents are basically killing mammoths, mastodons, giant ground sloth, horses, camels, big ass animals, usually with atlatls, though sometimes with actual hafted spears that they're literally just pushing into the animal.
Sometimes a throat rip, a Patrick Swayze-esque just throat rip.
Yes, that was actually an Algonquin throat rip. And,
that's a wrestling move, if I've ever heard one.
So this is a very unique time in human history. Their ancestors weren't necessarily doing this. They were surviving killing mammoths and mastodons, but they were doing other stuff as well. And they didn't have nearly as many or plentiful megafauna to be able to do this with. And their descendants, even if like 1,000 to 2,000 years later, were not doing this, because by that time, a lot of the megafauna had died out. And these people were then doing things like processing local plant material. They were still hunting deer and stuff like that, obviously. But there was a lot more of a gathering base, if you will.
My grandchild has not learned the traditional throat rip of our people. I feel our ways are dying.
So what we're seeing here is a period of time in which the best way to procure food, especially if you remember, we're still dwindling out of the Holocene boundary. So we still have like the tail end of that ice age there. The best way to procure food is to have everybody run out and go try and kill this mammoth or mastodon. And the best way to do that is with an entire big group, your entire little family group that you're with, which might be, you know, 10 to 15 people. Everybody needs to participate. And so all of the adults are probably out involved in this hunt. Everybody is probably killing big game, because this is not necessarily a hunter-gatherer nearly as much as we would think. This is mainly big game hunters, and this is all they do. Later, as specialization came, like for instance in the area we are sitting right here now, Damien, we went from the Paleo-Indian period, which this would kind of represent as big game hunters, to the Archaic period, where you started relying more on things like acorn processing and local plant processing. In that tradition, when that happened, we did see a division of labor, where all of a sudden women did start doing more of the gathering and men did start doing more of the hunting. And also you had much larger groups, because you had these plant resources that could support it. You weren't as mobile. And because of that, you could have division of resources. You didn't need every single grown adult who was in your group to go out to try and kill these big things. You could divide it up and say, okay, you women, you're going to stay here and process these acorns and watch the kids. We're going to go out and kill these big things.
Now, we've all done group projects. There are sometimes when you do a group project that there's people who give an A level of effort, and then there are people mm-hmm. who don't return emails.
Sure.
You know, their work needs to be spell checked. They're always tripping on the way to the mammoth so that they're one of the last uh-huh. people to the mammoth. How do we tell in those societies, do those people just not feast upon as much delicious mammoth blubber?
I don't think they have blubber. I don't think you would necessarily. I'm sure there were some slackers there. I think they would probably eat the same. They're pretty egalitarian societies in these cases, meaning that everybody is probably sharing that. I think you probably just note that and you'd be like, all right, you stay home with the kids. We need one person to watch the kids. Everybody else, we can go out and get it. You can stay
home. Yes, your nephew is a bit of a slacker, but he makes up for it with witty jokes and comments on things.
I'd also like to comment that we can tell certain types of hunting activity from actual skeletal structure because those who utilize things like heavy bow and stuff like that, which usually are much later cultures. This is obviously before bow and arrow even came to the Americas. Even then, they're usually using lighter bows. But as time progresses and we get to heavier bow use, so you're talking about groups like the Mongols or even before them, the Scythians, we can actually see the alteration of the skeleton based on that activity. You see a expanded right, or if in case they're left-handed, left arm, where it's way, way stronger because they're constantly doing, you know, a 50-pound draw or something like that. And so when we look at the overall scope of archaeology and what we expect in human cultures, this is a really neat thing, but it's not saying that throughout American prehistory, women were, you know, hunters 30 to 50% of the time. We might find some evidence that that existed into the archaic. I would be somewhat skeptical of that. I think the chances are what we're seeing is a blip in time where, because of this food procurement strategy, which is megafaunal hunting at the end of the last ice age, we are essentially seeing group dynamics where everybody is participating in the hunt. And that kind of seems to go away when you get segmented societies, specifically once you get larger segmented societies and you start getting in things like farming, which will come a couple thousand years later into Central America.
Yes. Like right now we have mostly a male military here in America, but right. You know, we have denied women the right to catch IEDs with their body. But as Terminator has foretold, in a Skynet-like event, when it's all hands on deck, anybody who can shoot a rocket launcher, ladies, we will gladly restore your rights to die by savage killing machine right next to your male counterparts.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you think about it, like there was a thing about like sheriffs in the Old West, like supposedly
against Terminators.
Supposedly you didn't want John Wayne. Like John Wayne would be a bad sheriff in the Wild West. They wanted tiny dudes because the idea was that the smaller you were, the smaller a target you were to be shot. And like you didn't have to do a lot of literal heavy lifting. You just had to not be shot. And so like there was this thought process in the Old West that if your sheriff was more than like 5'3", he was screwed because he was too big a target for the other guy when they'd have shootouts. Maybe that will also come into play when you want smaller targets.
And the sheriff would just, he wouldn't arrest you. He just would sneak up behind you and shoot you to minimize his chance of being shot.
I feel like you just described most of the Wild West and half of modern day Arizona.
It's like a game of tag. You're it.
Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 509, where you learned about the upside of Down syndrome. And while some, but not all, of prehistoric America had almost 50-50 women to male hunting ratios, thank you so much for joining us, and come on back later this week for Science Faction 510.
Man from future, your woman does not die under mammoth? She is allowed to sit safely at home and rear children? You are the real savages.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.